Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel and to the roundtable program this morning. Our Election Day coverage begins. It is Election Day, and we were just talking about our voting experiences already today, and we're looking forward to giving you the results tonight when the polls close. And Alan and I will be here for from 9 to 11, and we'll have NPR coverage all night. So we're looking forward to that. Our great WAMC news crew will be out in full force and talking to all of the winners and the losers and getting you the numbers. And so that'll be happening tonight. This morning we will talk about a wide range of topics, but of course we will begin with the midterms. And of course, it seems as if, and we just heard this at the BBC at the top of the hour, that the big story, of course, is the Senate and what's going to happen in the U.S. Senate. And the most expensive midterm campaign in American history. Most expensive. And what do we get for our money? Well, I guess we're going to find out.
By the way, it's not your money. It's the Koch brothers' money. It's the rich people's money who have this. You know, I mean, you can collect a lot of money from a lot of individuals, but in the end, so much of this, Joe, is just big, big money brought to you by the United States Supreme Court.
Absolutely right.
And Citizens United.
And Citizens United.
Right. Which sounds like such a good thing. Citizens United. It really is a terrible decision that will take years to undo, I'm afraid.
Well, and years to undo, but also I think years to see just how crippling it becomes.
Don't we know that already? Haven't we already seen this unprecedented influx of money and how that corrupts into our election system?
Yeah, to see how it plays out over many years, I mean, you can really see the negative impact. It's essentially the Supreme Court sanctioned and says it's a constitutional right to spend as much money as you want.
Right, by elections.
On political campaigns. Mm-hmm. By elections, yeah.
So Republicans entered the final hours confident that they'll gain at least six seats and take control of the Senate, but polls showed several races too close to call, likely runoffs in Georgia and Louisiana, along with late vote counts in Alaska, Colorado, and Iowa will mean that Senate control may remain in doubt beyond Tuesday night.
Mm.
I feel like they always say this, and then somewhere around 11 o'clock, they're like, it wasn't that bad. All right, we're done. Don't you find that? I mean, the last couple of years, like ever since 2000, it just seems that now they're like, all right, it's going to be too close to call. We're going to be here all night. And then, you know, 11:30, they're like, we're going to call this.
Right. The last presidential election, we were looking at different scenarios, whether the Senate and the House of Representatives would get into the election. And it was nowhere near that.
Right.
You're right.
So the latest numbers from and by the way, if you get a chance to go on the New York Times website, they have the upshot, the Senate forecast, and the only thing I don't like about it is that it looks like a video game, like it's a game, and it's not, obviously, but boy is it cool. And they have all of this stuff, and the one thing that I noticed, and Alan, let me ask you begin with this question. Because they go for months, they've been tracking the probability of each party controlling the Senate from the 2004 elections. In June, the Democrats had 60% and the Republicans had a 40% chance of winning.
Right.
Now they're saying on Election Day, it's the Republicans have a 70% chance and the Democrats have a 30% chance.
Right.
The margin has widened substantially.
In fact, it's been reversed according to what you just said. Right? In other words,
since September, October, and November, the gap has widened substantially.
Right.
My question is, what happened since June to turn so that the Republicans would lose almost 30% of their chance and of their
Democrats.
The Democrats, excuse me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well,
sorry.
I've been saying it all along, and I say it again one more time. The Democrats have turned out to be sort of, is this the right word, feckless. They have given up the narrative, and they have given it away to the Republicans. So you read, you hear it on NPR, it makes me crazy, the very unpopular Barack Obama. Once people accept the lie and just make it again, say it again and again, of course, it gets worse and worse. It brings its own rewards. So I think that's what's happened, Joe. I think that the Democrats have given up the narrative to the Republicans, and they're getting what they don't deserve.
Because in June, you start to see a real spike of of Republican support. And obviously, this
and what was happening politically at that time? Was it ISIS was beginning to come
ISIS
into the
was
news?
Beginning. We were still talking about Ukraine, right?
You know, so people were saying that Obama was not a strong international leader, and
not strong like Mitch McConnell, for example.
Oh, right.
Now,
well,
there's a strong leader for you.
Oof.
Yeah.
Well, he is a strong leader, and he's direct and blunt, and as much as it turns me off, and you too, I presume.
I think that's what I said.
He has followers who love that and admire that.
Well, I think that every person has both good and bad in them, and there are those who can appeal to the better part of us, and there are those who, you know, go for the dark and do that. And I happen to think McConnell's one of them, and so what happens is he seeks out that part of the human psyche which is not nice.
Well, he's actually coming off of a primary where he was being challenged from the right by the Tea Party. I mean, he survived that challenge, but he's not completely predictable. It would be, you know, if tomorrow morning or 3 months from now, whenever they do decide who's going to control the Senate, it will be interesting to see how he approaches leadership if that is to happen, he is to win.
Well, in fact, you raise a really good point, which is they want to win the presidential election. If they are seen as the force of darkness, it kills them because they won't win. They've won because of the way we organize our elections in our states and apportionment and all the rest. But they won't win unless—and he has been saying things on the campaign trail about how they're going to go in with a very positive attitude. So do I believe it? No. But I do think that that's what the choice is going to be for the Republicans and their strategy.
I think there's nothing in the lessons he's learned campaigning that indicates a more nonpartisan approach or a kinder approach. He's challenged by the right as if he needed more encouragement to be conservative and hardcore.
Well, but still, he has 6 years now.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have to worry about those guys. There'll always be, Rosemary, somebody further to the right who will take you on.
Yeah,
make any kind of compromise at all, the minute you let the government keep on going and don't close it down, you're a sellout, according to those guys. And there'll always be somebody like that.
When you look at the overall picture of the Senate, so basically we're talking about 8 races, right? Is that
right.
We all agree on New Hampshire, North Carolina, Kansas, Georgia, Alaska, Iowa, Colorado, and Louisiana. And some of those seem or not as close as we would have originally thought, but at least somewhat competitive. What does that tell us about? Are we still in this? Because we're all over the board there for the most part. What does it tell us about the demographics of our voting and how that is shifting? I mean, we used to have this north-south, the red state, blue state mentality, but obviously anything that was touching the water was blue, and anything in the center was red. And then, so are we seeing any changes as a result of this? Because we're all over from Alaska to Georgia to New Hampshire.
I think it's getting worse.
In what sense?
Well, in terms of the partisan strife. I think it's getting worse, and it's getting uglier, all the time. And ugliness wins because it works, and that's why they do it.
Yeah. Negative advertising does work. I mean, at the end, you've been bombarded with so much negativity that you don't trust anybody. And
I mean, I'm no Rob Astorino fan, believe me. But when you read Cuomo's remarks last night about how these basically are the forces of darkness and right-wingingness and we can't let it happen. That's not the way that Astorino has run his county. So that so that even, you know, in other words, nobody's excluded from this. It isn't a Republican way of doing it or a Democratic way.
I think there are two things I would put the blame on. One is citizens who respond to that kind of, you know, force of darkness rhetoric rather than to reasoned, thoughtful debate and writing about what's going on. And number two is the money thing that we refer to. There's no such thing as local politics anymore. Everyone counts the numbers. If you want to control the Senate, then you have to care about the Senate race in Alaska. When before did we ever much care about that? Now we do because it's one more seat in the Senate. So money goes from national powerhouses into what ought to be a locally controlled election. It's just the borders are disappearing. I mean, we talk about the New Hampshire race. That shouldn't even be happening. What is that guy doing in New Hampshire?
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
It's vacationing, also, I believe.
Yeah, what? It's also cynical, and it's a numbers game now by money and by vote counts.
Now, in Colorado, a state where marijuana is legal.
But it's still a very conservative state.
It is a conservative state. An 80% chance of the Republican winning. I find that fascinating.
Unseating a Democrat by the name of Udall, a long-established Democratic family that has, you know, done very well in the West.
Well, that's to me is one of the most interesting races. Kentucky's the one I'm really going to watch. But Colorado's interesting because people are voting against Udall say they're going to vote against him for people who ought to be voting for him. And they don't like that he comes from a dynasty. And his opponent has done a lot of work in rural areas that's suddenly getting a lot of attention. So that's one where maybe it isn't just the national money pouring in there. I'm not sure.
I think the Republicans, as a strategy, have been artful.
They have
somehow diminished the impact of, you know, what was called the Republican War on Women, which was the theme 4 years ago and 2 years ago. And they say that there's many more issues, and they have also been very effective on linking all their opponents with the president, who is unpopular. And the Democrats haven't stood up to defend all the good things that have happened.
Yeah, look at the difference between where we are when Obama took over and where we are now.
Right, economically.
Yes.
You know,
no one's talking,
GM,
no Democrats.
You think of Wall Street.
You think of,
the banks. You think of the whole
healthcare.
I mean,
two wars that we were in.
The healthcare thing, Rosemary, is very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because
even Mitch McConnell said that he likes.
Oh, they can keep. We can keep that state registry. That's a Kentucky thing. No, it really isn't. It's an Obamacare thing. But it's what you said, Alan, that the Democrats are not embracing their successes. They're not caring. Say, hey, look what we did. It looked bad for a while, but look at what we did. Why is that not a winning strategy?
To me, the paradigm, Rosemary, is the middle class. The middle class wins or loses elections for either party. And I have said it before, I'll say it again. If the middle class thinks that the people at the lower stratum are the ones who are making out as a result of something, I hate to say this because it's offensive to me, but they say, no, why are they getting everything? How come 35 million people maybe are eligible, they're not on the rolls, but eligible to be on the rolls. My kids, I have to, you know, that kind of stuff that you hear. And I think that explains a lot about what's happening in this country, why Republicans win.
I think you hit it, Mike, when you were saying how artful the Republicans are. A lot of the support that Alan talks about is coming from senior citizens who do get tons from the government through health care programs, for example, and Social Security. That's sort of a Democratic idea. So how do the Republicans go about getting support from people who are virtually voting against their own self-interest?
Well, the talking points have changed.
They have changed
dramatically. So, for example, there's Sean Patrick Maloney and Nan Hayworth are running against each other. Look, you can't make this stuff up. I used to interview Nan Hayworth all the time. I've interviewed her during this election a number of times. When I used to talk to her, she would come down very heavily on the Medicare issues. She would against. She'd come. She's a physician. She'd come down very heavily on Social Security. We have it all on tape. I mean, you can't make it up. And now, when I say to her, "Well, you used to say," you know, she'd say, "No, I didn't." So so there you are.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We'd love to hear from you. We'll talk about this and other topics as well. roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning. It is Election Day, November 4th, and we want you to do a couple things today. We want you to share your thoughts with us, roundtable@wamc.org. You're WAMC listeners, so you've probably already voted. And tonight you can check in and listen to our election coverage.
You can indeed.
If you haven't voted, then you can do that too.
Are we buying pizza for the group or not? Do you know that?
That depends on the president's approval.
Let me think about this.
All right. Can I ask you at the end? Because I want to put you on the spot on the air. So
Definitely.
We can. Yes. Okay. Good. we have some letters about what we were talking about before.
We do. Okay, so Max says, Joe has just asked, what has changed since June when the Democrats were 40% likely of keeping the Senate, now just 30% likely? The answer from a math point of view is nothing had to change. They may even have started to catch up in the polls. That 30% figure just means it's a lot less time now than there was in June for them to catch up all the way up. There is just easier to predict sometime a day in the future than 5 months in the future.
Well, yeah,
and that's from Max, Max the mathematician in Troy. And then, there's so many of them here. Let me see. Casey says, no, that's no good. And it was no good because it wasn't.
All right, that's okay.
So I have to read them. And then I have to judge whether or not they're, you know.
Triage. It's like MASH.
Selected excerpts.
But you have to do it fast. And then Amanda says, I'm preaching to the choir, I suspect, by appealing to WAMC listeners, but vote. Now, you know, I had a mentor, I think I mentioned him before, Sebastian DeGrazia, back in the day at the Eagleton Institute of Politics, my first job, who said, I don't vote. I said, why not? He said, I don't know enough. Now, there are 10,000 excuses about why people don't vote. And today on the Vox Pop, we're going to examine them all. We're going to be talking on Vox Pop today about why people don't vote.
So if they don't vote, do you think they'll call in to Vox Pop?
Well, no. Other people will call in to say what they have heard about why other people don't vote.
Ah.
You see?
Okay.
You see,
I'm going to try to get some of my students.
It's like
to
on Medical Monday, where this may not be an exact analogy, but it's like, and I'll get into trouble. But it's like on Medical Monday, where somebody calls in and says, "My friend thinks he may have, syphilis."
You know, you could have.
It's always my
you
friend.
You could have said high cholesterol. You could have said.
My friend thinks. Yeah, I like my friend thinks. Yeah, so
a little growth on his ear.
Well, it's important to vote. It's very important to vote today because the control of the New York State Senate is in balance.
That's right. You know, it's a fascinating story because most people who are in the know that Andrew Cuomo really did want a Republican Senate. Along comes the Working Families Convention. Zephyr Teachout is the issue. Cuomo is saved by Bill de Blasio, the so-called progressive, you know, in the room. But he has to give some stuff away, and he promises that he will assure a Democratic state Senate. But
Governor Cuomo
promised. Governor Cuomo, that, yes. Yeah. And then what he does is he writes a couple of perfunctory letters, and that's it, where de Blasio's out really on the hustings, you know, campaigning for people as are other people. But now it looks like, even without the four guys the four people who were the Democrats who went over to the Republican side, the IDC, it looks like the Republicans may take the Senate. Now, how can they do that? Well, it's very easy. They drew the districts. Is everybody listening? They drew the districts where they could win. And it is not an Obama year where a lot of Democrats come out and vote. So if you've drawn the districts, which is, in my mind, the single most undemocratic thing that you could talk about in a democracy. How can you have a democracy if you let the majority party guys draw their own districts where they can't lose? If that happened, Rosemary, in a foreign country where you are all the time, we would be saying, that's terrible. That's just terrible.
But the United Nations should do something.
Yeah, but it happens here. So now it looks like the Republicans may this year, even without the four people who sometimes are called the traitors, the Democrats, win enough seats in order to win the election. Now, the real question between the Working Families Party, this is obscure. Even if you're in Massachusetts, you should enjoy this. So along comes the liberal group, the Working Families Party. Should they nominate Teachout or should they nominate Cuomo? Well, the union people, the union fixers in their group come along and say, we have to nominate Cuomo or he'll be too mad at us. So they nominate Cuomo. Now, a lot of people are going to vote for Howie Hawkins in the Green Party.
The Green Party.
And I saw on Liz Benjamin's show last night, I saw this incredible lady from the Green Party who said, let's see now, people are going to vote for Cuomo to punish Cuomo on the working families line. It's pretty funny stuff, you know.
Right, that's a logic, that if you vote for him, not on the Democratic line, but the workers' family line, you'll move the status of the Working Family Party up on the ballot.
Yes, but why should they be rewarded, she was saying. Vote for us, she said, the Green Party lady. Vote for us and really punish Cuomo, because you can believe that Cuomo is polling incredibly at somewhere between 10 and 11% now on the Green Party line. This doesn't happen in this state. People think the Greens are sort of like to the left of Mao Zedong. And so,
they're saying Howie Hawkins will get 10 to 11%?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. That's right. And if that happens, every one of those votes really will come out of Cuomo.
So,
yeah, so what?
In a subtle switch, but staying on this, what I learned from reading the front page of the Times Union this morning is all of what you just said could be decided by 18 college kids on the SUNY Albany campus.
Explain that, will you?
This is a hysterical story when you think about it, by Jordan Carlio Evangelist. And when they built new dorms at
the
university,
best name in all of organized journalism.
It is. It's a terrific byline, Jordan Carlio Evangelist. When they built the Dutch Quad dorms at the University of Albany, two of them, specifically the Schuyler and the Van Cortlandt halls, sit right on the City of Albany, Town of Gilderland line. That happens also to be the boundary for the 46th State Senate District, where the incumbent, Cecilia Kacik, is locked in a heated rematch with former Assemblyman George Amador. 2 years ago, the race was not decided until early January after several recounts and court fights over which votes would be counted, etc. Kacik won by 18 votes in a district that was pretty much designed to be a Republican district, but it backfired because it had some Ulster County Democrats who kind of pushed it over for her.
And because it was a presidential election.
And it was, and a lot of Democrats were voting already, and that could be the reason that the Siena College poll this week has Amador up by as many as 11 points. But we won't know. We may not know. We may know tonight. We may not know till January the way
these things go. But I'm sorry.
But the students live in these dorms. Some can vote in the 46th district and some can vote over in the Neil Breslin district. And he has no opponent, so it won't matter too much there. He'll be reelected. It can even be students who are in the same dorm room, and if their bed is on one side of the room.
Yes.
So election officials are over there saying who's where.
Are they measuring the beds, where the beds are?
They could move their beds tonight and maybe vote in the other district. Who knows, you know. But they've ironed all this out because there was a lot of confusion 2 years ago.
Hooking up could be politically advantageous.
Yes, it did. So every vote will count in that race.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right. And, of course, the Kacik-Amador race is getting a lot of attention. It's one of about six races statewide that could be very close. So lawyers for both parties are poised to call for impoundments. We may not know who's going to control the Senate for days or weeks. Who knows? If the Republicans control it outright, they may be able to ditch the Independent Democratic Conference. It'll be a very interesting time in Albany in the next few months.
Yeah, no, I love that story. That's a great story because we do know, as a college professor, I know that I am, Joe is, Rosemary is, that we have found in the past that it is very, 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 very hard to get a student to vote.
Yeah. Remember back in 1972 when everyone thought the young voters would vote him into office. It didn't happen.
Well, in new polls, it's worked. It's interesting because you have to really work at it to get people out to the get people out to the polls. But, you know, they have better things to do, students, like sleeping late or, you know, having coffee. Or, you know,
well, this is a lesson
Rosemary
the whole
says,
country.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't blame just
wait, them. This is an issue that the whole country needs to be concerned about right now because it's hard to get any American to vote, it would appear from the numbers. And yet many states are putting in new laws that require new kinds of identification and other rigmarole that you have to go through to vote.
In order to make it more difficult.
Right. And well, so at Albany 2 years ago, students did turn out to vote for the Democratic election, but they were confused about exactly where were registered at home and where they were allowed to vote up here. There were long lines. People were discouraged from voting. And this sort of thing now, with these silly lines, could they really not have come up with a cleaner, easier way to do that? Split the two buildings, one on one side and one on the other?
Well,
really?
The city, there's a map, a photo in the paper today of the line going right through the dorm. But it has been kind of ironed out by the election officials, so students should know when they show up to vote whether
reporting class this afternoon to go take a look at that. So I'll tell you tomorrow what it looked like from their point of view.
Interesting to what you were saying about Americans voting. Countries like Australia, the Czech Republic, Estonia, Japan, Sweden, Slovenia, and Turkey all surpassed the United States for
voter turnout. Well, I mean, even I've said this before. We vote on a Tuesday. Why the heck are we not voting on a weekend when most people
are voting for a week? And some places are all mail now. All you have to do is lick the thing and, you know, put it in the and people won't do that.
Yeah.
So anyway, Bowie, who writes to us every once in a while, says everybody's got to vote and you got to vote to show them. And he says it in too many words. And let's see here. Eric says, I'm in Arkansas directing a show in Fayetteville and wanted to thank you for making WMC available online. You are my constant companion in my time alone, which is considerable and blessed without any access to TV. He's weaning himself off cable TV and like that. And let's see. And then Tony says, not a recount on 46. Tell Mike Spain, because the court was opening ballots that had not yet been counted. These ballots were being first counted. No votes were recounted.
Point well made.
Okay.
Continuing the counting in the 46th.
And then Mary Jo wants to know, many of my friends no longer have landlines. Are polls missing? Pollsters missing these people? Anybody know about that? Has anybody looked into that?
How many young people don't have landlines?
Yes.
I think they're still doing polling on cell phone numbers.
Yes, I think they are, and they can do it randomly. That's what they do. Yeah, so in other words, they may not know. You may not be in the book, but they can dial the numbers randomly. Whether it works as well, I don't know.
They have to buy these lists, and they're very expensive to get the cell phone list, but they do it in order to give it, quality to the authenticity.
Mm-hmm. And Horsecat says, do you think that our educational system is lacking by not impressing on their, quote, wards how important it is to vote? Once the mindset is instilled, I think it would stick, in quotes, and keep people voting throughout their lives.
Thank you, Nancy. I'd appreciate any help you have on how to do that. I can't even instill in them the need to read.
There is that. That's sort of it.
Kids, what's the matter with kids today?
I know, feeling old and curmudgeonly. I did an assignment where I sent them to the library. They had to find information in the library that was not available online. And I got notes back from seniors saying, well, this is the first time I've been in the library.
Oh, I believe that.
I made them talk to librarians and find out something that was in the library that was not available online.
Or get a note.
Good for you. Well, at least they'll have one single experience in their life.
It's frightening.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back. And we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll finish up and talk about a lot of other topics in a few minutes. Next.
Support comes from Community Foundation for the Greater Capital Region, working to connect donors with nonprofit organizations through philanthropic guidance and charitable stewardship. Your generosity, our stewardship, cfgcr.org. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, grocery, specialty foods, and more. Honestwade.coop. And Edward Garbasic, certified financial planner serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. Ed at HavocandWealthStrategies.com. Support comes from Gordon Fire Equipment, offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley. Family owned since 1956, GordonFire.com. Capital Counseling, mental health therapy for adults, teens, children, and couples in both private and group settings. Your lifeline to better mental health, CapitalCounseling.org. And Hudson Valley Fresh Dairy, a partnership of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farms providing fresh local milk, cream, sour cream, and yogurt to our neighbors. HudsonValleyFresh.com. Support comes from the Carey Institute for Global Good, Rensselaerville, announcing inaugural chamber music concert with Yehuda Hanani and Jeffrey Swan Friday, December 12th at 7 p.m., 518-797-5100 for tickets. Center for Better Hearing, Glens Falls, New York, Dr. Susan Boja and Cara Bedore providing audiological and hearing healthcare services in a patient-focused environment. HearingBest.com. Rhinebeck Kitchen and Bath, with locations in Rhinebeck and Coxsackie, offering design, project management, installation throughout the Hudson Valley since 1997. RhinebeckKitchenandBath.com. And Mother Earth Storehouse, nutrition educators on staff to help customers make healthy lifestyle choices, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and natural food since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. It is, we have 8 minutes left, and we'll get to as many topics as we can in that 8 minutes. Let us go, and I feel like I will be depriving Rosemary if I don't start with the Ebola nurse. Ebola lady. Oh, that's boy. Right. The movement of a Maine nurse. You know her perhaps as Casey Hickox. The movements of a Maine nurse who has treated Ebola patients are still not completely restricted, but she must continue to monitor her health for possible symptoms of the virus through the remainder of its incubation period. That's according to a court order filed Monday, which extends the terms of a judge's Friday ruling through November 10th. The decision means that no more hearings will occur on the matter unless there is an emergency. And so they've come to an agreement here, if you will, between she says she will abide by this finally, and
well, it ain't much, right? She has to do is
take her temperature. Yeah.
I don't know. I took some heat when last week when I described her as whiny, and people defended her. And since then, she's become a hero for freedom. Like, she stood up to the government, which was trying to hurt her rights. And so I really, really read a lot about this and tried to keep an open mind. And there's seemingly every reason to be sympathetic to her. She is nice looking, nice minded. She's done work for poor people in Africa. She has a very nice boyfriend, lives in a good place. She's smart. But I still find her highly annoying. I think this is so arrogant. It was too hard to just stay indoors and take her temperature twice a day. She had to go on a bike ride. I don't get it. What is the big deal? If you can go to Africa to work with very ill people, why can you not stay inside for 3 weeks? Like I say, read a book. I just really don't get this. So I'm sure I'll hear from people. But no, I do not think she's a heroine for freedom. And one last thing, and then I promise I'll stop ranting. Why could we not have someone who is standing up for rights that we truly are losing because we're being spied on, because our privacy is being invaded by our government? That's a freedom fight. I would stand up for someone, but not because doctors who don't really know exactly what to do are saying maybe you should stay in for a while. Don't get it.
Well, I think you make a compelling case. Somebody like Casey Hickox should recognize the importance of not even giving a possibility of a danger to people. But that's her point of view, that science says that she is no danger to people. And she's insisting that this be decided by science, not by rhetoric or fear. And that's an important stance. Over time, I think it'll look better. She will look like somebody who stood for science and stood for rationale, not for emotion in this case. And that's the battle that she's waged on behalf of people who, may not be so articulate, who may be held against their will should this there be more flare-ups of this.
I keep on hearing about this in her perspective, but if you're the governor of Maine,
right,
how do you not say this is what we have to do? Because if she does contract the illness, then they're going to go after his head, right?
Well, that's why Christy Cuomo, the governor of Maine,
right,
and all these other guys are doing it.
Yeah.
It's exactly
you,
what
you
they
understand.
Do.
I mean, that's people are talking about the politicalization of it, but that's just common sense, isn't it?
And here's the bad position you're in. If, like me, you think she's doing a wrong and selfish kind of arrogant thing, what do I have to say? Like, oh, I hope she gets Ebola or her boyfriend does to prove my point? That's horrible, and of course I don't think that. And yet, that's the position she puts you in. There's no way to just say, come on, what's the big deal? You know, it may be overboard, but they're trying to do the right thing.
Well, the fact that she's compromised seems to me to show that there's some merit in your argument. Although, I must say, I'm sort of with her and not with you. And that's because when the next person writes me and says, did you hear what Rosemary said? I'll say I gave her a hard time.
But going back to what Joe was saying, I think the new operative political line is in an overabundance of caution, .. I mean, why not just be really cautious.
Yeah, because there's science.
Yes,
and there's also science on flu. There's also science on contagious pneumonia. Mm-hmm, there's also science on this stuff, which are far worse. And because this is sort of an unknown thing, she's saying, I'm relying on the science. I don't have it. I haven't
no symptoms,
shown any
sure.
of the symptoms. Yeah. Therefore, go away.
Well, the usual thing in these situations is you say, try to convince others. It's not up to her to say, science is on my side, and therefore I'm going on a bike ride. That's the selfish part. She may indeed be right in her thinking, but not in her actions. I mean, we've got thousands of troops are staying quarantined out of an abundance of caution. They're a lot more inconvenienced than she is. Yet you do it because you're trying to protect your fellow citizens.
You do it for two reasons, to protect your fellow citizens and not to make people freak out. Even in spite of the scientific evidence that you're not going to endanger them.
Well, but this freaking out stuff, we heard this morning on the BBC, if you were up early enough, that, you know, people from Somalia were being yelled at, keep your kid home from school just because there's Somalian. Yeah.
Which is nowhere near West Africa.
But yes, but you see, I mean, where does it stop? Where do the precautions stop?
Well, we're out of time. But I mean, we were talking about this last week. But also, there's the whole issue of if she's trying to stop and stop hysteria, it seems in a lot of her actions have only increased the hysteria.
You're right.
So we're out of time. I want to thank everybody who joined us. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Also, don't forget, we'll have 2 o'clock is Vox Pop today. We'll be talking about voting, Midday Magazine at noon, and, of course, Northeast Report and Northeast Report Late Edition. We'll have coverage of Election Day. And then Alan and I will be here tonight covering election with the NPR coverage as well. So all of that going on, and we hope you'll join us. And, of course, we'll be back here tomorrow. Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it, and we'll continue the roundtable after this break.